Hey, welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio. This week's episode is one that I've been excited about for a while because we've got our first attorney guest on the podcast. Joining us this week is attorney Tom Crosley. Tom is the founding attorney of the Crosley Law Firm, which is a San Antonio-based personal injury and wrongful death firm. Tom himself handles a lot of brain injury cases, and he's worked on groundbreaking brain injury litigation that's advanced new techniques and approaches in that area of the law. He's also given legal education presentations on brain injury litigation for the State Bar of Texas and others. So we have Tom on the podcast to talk about one of those noteworthy brain injury cases involving a Texas teenager named Max Menchaca and his family. And from there, we're going to use that as sort of a case study to talk about how you can promote your own major case results and leverage them to get wider exposure for your firm. Before we get started, just a quick reminder. If you're not familiar with LaFleur, we're your full-service digital marketing partner, and we work with law firms across the country to create data-driven marketing strategies that grow their businesses. To learn more about us, just visit our website at lafleur.marketing. That's LAFLEUR.marketing. Okay, we want to get right to the content you want to hear, so let's get over to the podcast studio where we'll join Tom Crosley and Chip LaFleur on this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. All right. So here on the podcast this week, we've got a guest that we're really excited about. It's our first attorney guest on the podcast. And we've got Tom Crosley of the Crosley Law Firm calling in from San Antonio, Texas. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. We're glad to have you. And thanks for making the time. Also on the podcast, we've got one of our frequent guests. It's Chip LaFleur, founder and president of LaFleur.
Hey, Stephen. Thank you.
So what we want to talk about this week is Tom and the Crosley Law Firm kind of had a major case last year, and you know it was a case that was pretty involved on the litigation side and ended up with you know a major kind of headline-making verdict. And we at LaFleur kind of helped out when the case concluded in terms of the PR side and publicizing the verdict. So what we want to do is we want to talk about this case, give you a little bit of the details about the litigation and how that went. And so what we want to do is we want to use that as a lens through which we can talk about how to publicize your verdicts like this for maximum impact. So to get started, Tom, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened to Max Menchaca?
Sure. So Max Menchaca, at the time of his injury a few years ago, was 16 years old. He went to a trampoline park in a suburb in northwest Houston. He went with a couple of his buddies from school. It was the first day of summer vacation. And Max and his buddies go to this trampoline park. And of course, they are asked to sign these waiver forms and get parental permission slips at the beginning. There was a weird legal issue with their case because these boys went outside in the parking lot and basically forged their parents' signatures on these documents and then went into the trampoline park. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to a trampoline park, Stephen, but over the last decade, there's been an explosive growth in the number of trampoline parks that have opened across our country. And they typically cater to children. And they'll have like a huge 30,000 square foot area with a bunch of bouncing surfaces. They might play dodgeball in one area, slam dunk basketball in another area, gymnastics in another area. And that's kind of how this place was set up as well. It's a pretty unregulated industry. And there's a tremendous amount of injuries that come out of these places, anywhere from broken bones to bumped heads to, you know, even deaths or paralysis in some cases. So let me get back to what happened to Max. He and his buddies were playing, and it turns out that the night before Max's injury, this trampoline park had a rip across one of its trampoline surfaces at the base of what they call the summit. The summit was an 8-foot-high structure that you could run up one side. It's all covered in trampoline surface. You could run up one side and slide down the other. And there was a rip at the base of the summit on one side, and instead of closing down the park, the park manager decided to open and not even close off the trampoline area. They just took some barricades, like the kind you use to form lines in a movie theater. They call them stanchions. So that's what these geniuses at this trampoline park decided to put across the trampoline bed itself to try to keep kids out of the area where the rip was. The problem, Stephen, is they put this stanchion on the side of the trampoline that had the rip, but not on the opposite side of the summit, what we called at trial the blind side. And so what happened is Max and his buddy were racing, and Max raced up one side. There's no barrier on his side, gets to the top and slides over, and he slides right into this rip. As he slides into it, his feet get caught. His body goes through the hole. The trampoline surface is suspended about 3 feet above a concrete subfloor, and Max strikes his head on that concrete subfloor, has a skull fracture and bleeding in the brain. Witnesses from the event describe Max's injury as first hearing a sound that sounded like a watermelon dropping from the top of a high building, a loud pop. Fortunately for us, the whole incident was captured on in-house security video. Most of these trampoline parks have video cameras set up in multiple angles, and so we were able, through the court process, to get copies of those videotapes, and we could see exactly what happened. At the moment that Max was sliding into the hole, there was a teenage jump guard who ostensibly is there to warn kids to stay away from this area, to protect them from dangerous activities. And this jump guard was not even paying attention, looking the other way, doing nothing to keep kids out of this particular area. So the end result of it was that Max had a horrible injury. EMS was called. He was taken to the hospital. He was in the hospital for a few days. He was sent home. He had a very difficult recovery. He basically missed the entire summer. He had significant brain deficits. He was able to go back to school and eventually to do quite well in school, but he has certain permanent deficits. Ultimately, when we tried the case, we knew it was going to be newsworthy and important for a couple of reasons.
So what is newsworthy about this case? You mentioned that it's newsworthy. What in particular? I know you alluded to it earlier, and that there are more of these trampoline parks cropping up every day. But what did you see as kind of the part of this case that captured something bigger?
Yeah, there are two things I think made this case newsworthy. Number one is it was one of the first lawsuits in the country going to trial against a trampoline park involving a serious injury. And the second thing that made it newsworthy is there had been news coverage at the time of Max's injury. And I find from my other cases, if there's early news coverage on a case, when that case goes to trial, the TV stations are more inclined to run another story because they've got some file footage. When we filed the lawsuit in Max's case, we also did a press conference at that time, which generated yet more publicity. So I think we knew that we had something that was an important public safety issue. We knew it was potentially a big case, and we knew that if there was a verdict in favor of our client, that news outlets, not just in Houston, but throughout the country, would probably be interested. I'm pleased to report that after a two-week trial, lots of complicated evidence and scientific and medical evidence, we were able to achieve a verdict of $11,485,000 in that case. It did turn out to be the largest verdict ever against an indoor trampoline park, and we ended up with quite a bit of publicity, not just in Texas, but throughout the country, thanks in large part to the efforts of LeFleur Legal Marketing.
Well, thanks. Thank you for that shout out there. Obviously, the litigation side was the major thing, and the verdict that you got for Max and the Menchaca family, was remarkable, and hopefully it kind of sent a message to trampoline companies that, this kind of unsafe behavior is not going to fly and that they will be held accountable. But let's talk about, from obviously you've had this verdict and, this is something major for any firm, a headline grabbing verdict. I don't think that, making headlines is the first goal of any attorney, or at least any good attorney, but, it is a way to publicize your firm and to help other clients who you may be able to help find you. So I'm going to turn it over to Chip now, since we kind of handled this aspect of this case. Chip, when you have a client that gets a verdict like this, What's your plan of attack? What's your line of thought, and how do you approach the sort of PR press around something like this?
Well, so taking even a couple steps back from that, I think the most important thing, as Mr. Crosley pointed out, was he went into this being aware that this was going to be a meaningful case. It was going to be a meaningful case from the perspective of public safety, and it was something that people needed to become aware of. He also recognized that this was something the media would be interested in. So going back to when he first filed the suit, he took the position and made the decision to set up a press conference, and Tom's going to circle back around and talk about doing that, because really it's the narrative from beginning to end that we want to take and share with the public. That's what makes this a particularly interesting story. So Mr. Crosley set that up at the very beginning by doing that press conference. So that gets the media interested in the first place to say, you know what, we're interested in this story, but we're interested in this whole story. So I felt like he set this up in a way that really positioned us well to then move forward and continue to put that out there. And then as the case was going on, his firm also did a great job of keeping us in the loop. So I don't think it's uncommon for a law firm who's working on a case like this to not want to get ahead of themselves. You don't want to make the assumption that they're going to win if they go to trial. So sometimes there's a hesitancy to reach out and say, hey, we've got the potential for a big case to come through. Because if there's a loss, obviously we're not going to push it out and do a press release and do all these other pieces. It's not a success story. And every time you go to trial, there's the possibility that it won't work out how you want it to. But you still need to keep whoever's looking at the PR side of this in the loop, because when the case does wrap up, we need to help write those press releases, get things ready to go out. And so we did do that. We wrote a press release along with Mr. Crosley and his firm, made sure that we got it factually correct and all the details right. In this case, we also compiled a list of local reporters that we'd push that out to.
Can I just speak to something on the press release side too?
Sure.
I feel like I have something to maybe contribute here because I have worked as a journalist before and I know lots of journalists and I know how they work. Let's say in my shoes as a journalist, if I get a press release, there is a big difference between if I get a press release that just, you know, has, here is what happened, you know, here's the story, call so-and-so to find out more about it. Or if I get a press release that says, you know, here is the story, here is all the information about it in detail, here are quotes from the attorney that you can print, you know, without having to pick up the phone. If you want your press release, you know, journalists today, they have to file 4 stories a day. They're overworked. Giving them something that they can is complete, that they can use to write a story without having to pick up the phone and call you, can mean the difference between getting your story in print or not. So I always recommend, you know, write the story for them is how I would put it, as much as you can. You know, if they're a really good journalist from a great outlet that gives them a lot of time, then they'll pick up the phone and call you for more. But, you know, that journalist who, you know, they need one more story for the day and, you know, they barely have time to make deadline. If you give them everything they need in the press release, that journalist, you know, may be able to publish your story as well. So that's just something I'd like to add.
No, and that's a good call. And your input as we put this together and your leadership in doing that was incredibly helpful also.
Oh, thanks.
So, you know, like Stephen said, so we put together a package that we could send out. We sent it out to that list that we had compiled. Now, we have some tools to help us do that more efficiently now even than we did then, so we can get that out to a wide audience and assemble that in one spot. And then for a case like this, we also like to do a wire service press release. Now, those used to be very popular for organic search because it was a way to build links that point back to your website. They are less important for that now, but they're still important, especially when something's really newsworthy. We see a lot of companies who just put out wire service after wire service after wire service. We try to reserve these for meaningful things like this. And so that when people see that we put those out on behalf of our clients, they're going to take them more seriously. And then we also took that and we assembled all that information in a unique format to put it on the Crosley Law website, so that if people did look up that story, then it wouldn't just be the media that they'd run across. Or if a media entity put out a story and they wanted to link back to more of the story or more resources for that, they'd have a place to do that. So we posted that to the blog. We put it out on the website. And because of the unique circumstances of this case and the potential impact on public health, there was a lot of support among the family to publicize this, to say, hey, this is a risk. And if you take your kids to a trampoline park, these are some things that you need to be aware of. So when we put that information out on a social media, his family really, really carried the torch there.
I'll echo Chip in that regard. The mother of Max in this case really took it as her personal mission to make these places safer, get the word out about the dangers to kids, and she wanted more regulations. This became really a mission for her, and she was. It's always good to have passion in your client. If you're a lawyer that's going to try a case, then you can be much more effective if you have passion on your side. And Chip, do you think the same is true when it comes to publicizing, garnering publicity and for an event like this?
Oh, absolutely. And Max's mom still tags me on Facebook posts that are related to trampoline gym injuries, for example. So this is not something that she's, her interest in helping people with is passing. She's still very serious about that. I know she still tags Mr. Crosley on those posts too. I know she still tags you. So the passion behind that is a huge thing. And I think, from our perspective, I mean, this is the type of case that we want people to know about, both from the public safety perspective, but also from the perspective of if something like this does happen to someone you care about, how can we help them find someone who will do the best job possible to try to resolve the situation as much as can be?
Definitely. And just another thing to note, in terms of, kind of promoting this on your website, of course you want to write it up as a news story. But also, there's going to be, if this verdict is really, something that's going to make headlines on its own merit, the facts of the case are going to be out there in the news. What you want to offer on your website is, maybe a little something different that people can't get from those outlets. Something that humanizes the family more, humanizes the clients. And if you've got a client like this, that's passionate about, this cause or, promoting their issue, I think it's great to feature them more and, just kind of dig a little deeper into that story wherever you can on your website.
I think so too. And that also kind of segues into kind of the final piece of what we try to do with something like this, which is on a consistent basis, tell stories about successes of the firm. And so we do that on the website, but then we also push that out and we try to cultivate and grow a list that we could reach out to through email. And of course, the Menchaca case, we put, front and center on a newsletter that we send out. And that goes out to other attorneys, that goes out to clients that have worked with the firm in the past, friends, anybody who's signed up for that newsletter. And so we took that post from the website and we pushed that out to a large list of individuals who we thought might find that interesting.
Another point too, just a couple of actually other points I'd like to raise here. Number one is just a reminder that when you're publicizing this stuff, some states do have, restrictions and regulations regarding when you publish dollar amounts to a verdict. You may have to disclose, how much of that verdict went to attorney's fees or the actual amount that the client received. If you're an attorney, hopefully you know that, but it may be something to watch out for. Just one other point I'd like to make is, generally on this podcast and in all the resources that we try to provide to lawyers, I like to think that we remain pretty agnostic in terms of, trying to direct you to work with us or another agency or trying to go a do-it-yourself route. In fact, we try to give firms a lot of tools to try to handle things themselves. From what I've seen in terms of something like this, publicizing a major case verdict, I do think it's an area where it's a challenge for attorneys who are trying to do it themselves. Because, the litigation of a major case, it's like running a marathon. And Tom, you can speak to this maybe and correct me if I'm wrong, but, it's like publicizing a case after the outcome. It's like, when you're the attorney and doing it all, it's kind of like running a marathon and then doing a 400 meter dash on top of this. Most of the attorneys that we work with, after a case, they want to spend time with their family. They need to cut back a little bit and unwind. But, it's really a critical time in terms of you know, the publicity for the case. You've got to act quickly. You've got to reach out to journalists quickly. You've got to hold a press conference quickly. You've got to write up in the blog as soon as you can, all of these things. So this may be one area where it's, you know, there's an argument to be made for working with either an external or in-house marketing partner, at least on PR, you know, elements like this.
Oh, for sure. And we've worked on very successful verdicts before where on a Friday at 6 o'clock or 6:30, we get,
they always come in.
We get it. Exactly. Right. And then we get a text message that says, we just wrapped up, you know, one of the biggest car seat verdicts in the nation. And we want to do everything that we can to get the word out on that because it's a big deal. And there's a lot of other people who have the same car seat who may be affected by something. This just as an example. But it's a whole lot harder to then assemble that story, get it out at that point in time. And again, we don't want people to feel like they're jinxing their case. But if we're aware of the case and we're aware of some of the elements in that case, we can work on writing something up and doing something about it. And so there again, you know, when Tom recognized that this was an important case, he did that at the very beginning of the case. And sometimes you may do that and not be right. You know, you may do that and say, I think this is a big case, and it turns out to not be a big case. But what's the loss there? You know, some time in preparing, some time in thinking, maybe getting your hopes up a little bit. I'd rather not be able to publicize something that didn't turn out to be a good case 100 times and not miss that one opportunity to really make an impact. And not just for the firm, but I think for the general public, you know, for people's health and safety. I'd rather not have the opportunity 100 times, but be prepared than miss a scenario where we had a great opportunity to increase awareness, also increase awareness of the firms that we work with, you know, one time.
I think there's a lesson a lot of lawyers could take away from this. I think we do get so wrapped up in the trial of our cases, and rightfully so. I mean, they're 14-hour days. You feel like you're in the trenches. When the case is over, man, sometimes it feels like you've just finished battle, and the last thing you want to do is work more on that case. But if it was an important case, it's probably important not just to you and your client, it's probably important to a wider audience. So it's the thing that I would recommend lawyers is before you go into that trial, if it's the kind of case that has the potential for a newsworthy result, have somebody like your marketing team ready with the facts of the case, some important photographs, because we all know that journalists and media love pictures, and that old story, that old saying that a picture is worth 1,000 words. I think press releases that are accompanied by some kind of photos or things like that tend to get more traction. But have somebody ready with that stuff. In Max's case, I felt like I could have done a better job of being ready. We certainly told Chip enough about the case, and he knew what was involved. But we got a verdict, and I'm still scrambling to the next day to get more data out. Chip did a masterful job with the way he handled it. But I think that most lawyers just get such tunnel vision in the trial that they're not thinking about the big picture.
Right.
And none of us want to jinx our case. So I'm even going to knock on wood here because I don't want to jinx my next case. I never want to write that press release before the case is over, but I want to at least have a plan for what to do if we win. The whole point of going to trial is to win.
Right.
So shouldn't I plan for the off chance that we do win?
I think so. And, you know, if you are a little superstitious and, you know, you're worried about jinxing your case, just keep in mind that, you know, there must be some sort of bad karma for springing a verdict on your marketing partner. And then they're like, oh, you were at trial? We didn't know. So, there, you know, that's to be weighed too. And just to go off what you're saying, Tom, I think that that's a great suggestion in regards of, you know, adding photos to your press releases. And I'll go one step further too and say, you know, video is so powerful today. And if you're able to attach a video to your press release and to your communications, you know, so many outlets online, you know, they want to feature video stories heavily and they have a quota of video stories. If you're able to provide that and it's something that's high quality that they can splice into a, you know, a news report that they can use, I think that's huge on the PR side of things. Okay, so I think we've covered this case, most of the stuff we want to talk about on the PR side. Tom, we just wanted to ask you a couple quick questions. I know you have quite a bit of experience organizing kind of an old school press conference or press gaggle, as journalists tend to call them. So, what are some of the techniques that you use to get the word out to journalists, to stay in contact with journalists, and to make sure that you have an audience when you have something like this to say?
So before I worked with LeFleur Marketing, we would keep a list of all of our San Antonio area journalists. My main office is in San Antonio. We also have an office in Houston. And every year we have a handful of cases that are newsworthy. And so we would make relationships with those folks. There tend to be, in a smaller TV market like San Antonio, a lot of those people are only here for a few years before they move on. So the guy that I talked to 2 years ago in a TV interview may not be there anymore. And so that's always a challenge. So we're always having to update that list. But we just try to contact as many people as we can. And usually, I'll usually host a press conference if I'm going to do one. It's either in my conference room with the clients, because they always want the clients there. They don't necessarily want to talk to the lawyer. Usually, though, they will talk to the lawyer if the lawyer can tell a good story. Sometimes we'll do those press conferences at the courthouse. Sometimes we do them, outside or at a scene, but most of the time they're in the office. And we just kind of put the word out. And sometimes we'll follow up with phone calls. And after you've done a few of them, people at the various news sources tend to know whether or not it was worth their time to come. And so you tend to do a little bit better each time you do one.
So just as a journalist, what I'm taking away from what you're saying regarding press conferences, I think the tip maybe for attorneys is just to be a reliable source of news. Your tip about bringing the client is great. Get the key people there that journalists can get quotes from. And even though at newspapers there tends to be, high turnover, journalists will, give off to new journalists, or the editors will get to new journalists, the sources that matter to them. And so, by holding these press conferences that are, useful to journalists, they can use to write the story, you become one of those reliable sources. So I think that's a great takeaway.
I would also tell lawyers that are thinking about doing a press conference, what's the worst thing that happens if nobody shows up? Nothing, right?
Right.
I mean, it's your conference room, it's just another day at the office.
Yeah.
But if somebody shows up, then, I mean, so why not? I mean, it's unknown, it's scary. What if they quote you out of context? In my experience, journalists are not out to get us. They're out to get a story. So just be yourself and tell your story. If they like it, they're going to run with it.
So Tom, one more thing I wanted to bring up about the case. I know this case had kind of an interesting tie-in with sports, where it ended up on, Fox Sports Network being covered nationally. Can you talk about what happened there?
Sure. Just by happenstance, there was a good Samaritan at the trampoline park that rushed to Max's aid, crawled down in the hole, held him while he was having a grand mal seizure. The family later credited this man with saving Max's life because, there was a bunch of teenagers and young adults that were the, quote, managers and jump guards at this place, and no one knew what to do given how serious Max's injury was. And I think some of those kids were panicking. Well, turned out there was a college football coach who, by the time of trial, was the head coach of the University of Kansas. His name is David Beatty. At the time of Max's injury, he was a quarterbacks and receivers coach at Texas A&M University. In fact, he was one of Johnny Manziel's coaches. So Coach Beatty was there, and Coach Beatty ended up being a witness at the trial of our case. And because of that, a few months after the verdict, Coach Beatty invited Max and his mom and dad and sister to go to see a Kansas football game. By then, Max's sister was a freshman at the University of Oklahoma, so she was a Cowboy. And the Cowboys were visiting the Jayhawks, and so the Menchaca family was invited by the coach and got to meet the coach and sit in special seats, and University of Kansas did a story about that. And Mrs. Menchaca had posted on Facebook that, Coach Beatty saved her son's life, and that post went viral and was picked up by news outlets. And one thing led to another, and Fox Sports called. And they came down and they did interviews of of the Menchaca family, and then they went to Max's school where he's in college, and they followed him around one day, and they talked to me, and they ended up getting some video and other exhibits that we used in the trial, and LeFleur Marketing was helpful here in giving me advice about how to handle this situation, and Chip, let me turn it over to you.
Yeah, so I mean, this was a life changing experience for the coach, for Coach Beatty. He like Tom said, he was right there and he helped him get through this. And so then they aired this piece, and in this instance, this was really a piece about Max and his life, and it was about the coach and his experience there. But one thing we were able to get to help Crosby Law Firm was credit for the actual media files themselves. So even though Crosby Law Firm wasn't mentioned in the story specifically, because it wasn't about the case, it was about Max's life and recovery, we were still able to get some exposure by providing those resources. So there again, it just kind of underscores what we talked about before, you know, providing pictures, providing videos. These are things that can be used and potentially reused even on follow-up stories. And in that case, what we got was, you know, provided by Crosley Law across all of those media pieces that we put out there.
Right. And I think that's a great takeaway. Okay. That's all we have time for in this week's podcast. But we really want to thank Tom Crosley for coming on. Tom, we appreciate it so much, and we hope we'll hear from you again sometime on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephen.
And Chip, as always, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks, Stephen.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio, but we hope you found this episode as stimulating and exciting as we did. In the coming weeks and months, we're going to try to bring you a lot more guests from a diverse range of backgrounds so we can dive into all sorts of interesting topics in the digital marketing world. Don't forget to check back with us in 2 weeks for another episode, where we'll talk with Kyle and Dave from the LeFleur content team about some of the major content marketing trends of 2017 and whether law firms need to be joining the bandwagon on those trends. As always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lefleur.marketing. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LeFleur.